Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show,
which is so amazing and loved by everyone.
Afternoons on The Score.
First finals game in franchise history is a rousing success. Denver's 9-0 at home in the playoffs. They take game one.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show. Afternoons on The Score.
Nuggets very much did take game one. And the heat kept coming. They made it respectable, but it never really felt in doubt at any level. We'll talk some Bulls as well, but want to get into some of the NBA Finals with NBA Insider. Covers it now for Heavy.com. Been covering the league for a long time. You hear him on The Score often. Sean Devaney with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Doing well. I'm curious if you think, I mean, you know, I don't think that anyone other than television executives really care about the ratings, but do you buy the notion that this isn't an attractive NBA Finals for one reason or another?
Well, you know, I mean, I hope it's a long series, because as it goes on, more and more people will watch. And I feel like, I don't think that this is a stretch to say that Nikola Jokic is a very, very underappreciated superstar, and that if more people could watch him, then you know, he'd be more of a draw. They don't put him on national TV a whole lot, and you know, this is an opportunity for a bit of a coming out party for him. So, yeah, you know, this isn't in terms of the ratings and the markets and all that, it isn't the greatest matchup, but in terms of basketball, it's pretty good, and it has a chance to be a real fun series. So, like I say, I hope it goes long, because the longer it goes, the more likely you're gonna get more and more you're gonna get more and more fans watching.
Sean Devaney, a former teammate of mine at Sporting News Radio decades ago, is what it feels like, Sean. So nice to talk to you. You know what was boring about that game last night was the feeling that the Heat didn't have any shot. That's what was tough. Like, we reached the third quarter, and as Denver started to, you know, pull away or just hold tight to that lead, do they have any shot in this series to win a couple of games schematically?
Yeah, I think they do. You know, it's very tough to win in Denver. You know, it takes a little while to get adjusted to the altitude, and really just about every game that Denver has played as a game one on its home floor, they've pretty much dominated. I'm thinking back, you know, Phoenix they did, Lakers they did, and this one they did. I forget if they did against Minnesota, but they pretty much dominated that whole series. So I would assume so. It's such a big advantage, you know, at this point. And the fact that Miami went to seven games in the Eastern Conference Final, they didn't have the opportunity to get out to Denver and adjust to that altitude. So they were sort of set up by their inability to knock off the Celtics faster in the last round. That really set them up for a disappointing game one. And you know, that's gonna be a problem. You know, trying to bounce back from that. I think when they get to Miami, you'll see the Heat play much better. That's been something that's happened with Denver when they go on the road.
Sean, you were on with Mully and Haw, our morning show, I think a couple weeks back, and you said something that sparked some conversation on this show, where you talked about the split among the Bulls on, like, in terms of the decision makers.
Yeah.
On who wants to, people want to keep it together versus blow it up. So we played an impromptu game of who wants to keep it together and who wants to blow it up. And we tried to guess among, you know, Michael Reinsdorf and Arturis and Eversley and Billy Donovan. Can you give us some informed reporting there?
You know, I don't know specifically who's in which camp. I can tell you that, you know, I know Arturis put this thing together and feels like it hasn't had a real shot. And he would like to, he's certainly someone who wants to see this play out and has some confidence in the way the Bulls looked for the short time they were together before Lonzo's first injury, whatever that was now, a year and a half, I guess. When the Bulls were a pretty good team and they were number one in the East for a while. So, Arturis really is in that camp and that's probably going to be the final say right there. But you get down the line a little bit and I think some people can read the writing on the wall. Certainly there's concern about Lonzo Ball and whether he'll ever play again. And how do you deal with that? There's not much they can do about it at this point either way. So I think the feeling is let's just hope that he can come back and play.
Our learned cynicism about Reinsdorfian ownership in this town leads us to think that ownership is happy with maybe making the playoffs as opposed to blowing it up and then trying to get great. I'm sure you understand that thought process. Does that jibe with anything that you've heard about ownership?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, that's been the MO basically since Michael Jordan retired is, we don't want to be bad, but if we can be in the 45 to 50 win range and get to the playoffs and get to the second round of playoffs, and we're going to have completely sold out suites and season tickets, and we've got a good regional TV deal. I mean, what more do you want? That's as much as you could possibly make. And so, you know, why extend yourself to get a little bit more? You really saw it last year, right? I mean, where they had the opportunity to spend a little bit more money with their mid-level exception, but that would have required going into the luxury tax, and they would not do it. They would not go into the luxury tax. And you saw that it's hard to say they would have been that much better if they had done that, but they would at least given themselves somewhat of a better chance.
So who's going to be their point guard next year?
That's a fair question. They've got a bunch of pretty good point guards, you know, but nobody who's really, certainly nobody on Lonzo's level. You know, I mean, Caruso can handle the role a little bit. AO can handle the role a little bit. Maybe Patrick Beverley comes back. None of those are very inspiring options, though. And this is a team that, for all of its talent and for as good as DeRozan and even Vucevic that last year played pretty well and LaVine, of course, for all that talent, they need an organizer. They need a guy who can come in and be a playmaker. And that's what Lonzo really did very, very well, in addition to the defensive end, which is something where they're lacking at that point guard position as well. So, you know, that's something where, they're going to have to figure out how to address that, because if they go with somebody on the roster, then they're probably not going to be a much better team than they were last year.
You know, we've talked, Sean, about D'Angelo Russell. We've talked about Fred VanVleet. We've talked about Dennis Schroeder. Like, these are all kind of orbiting whatever the Lakers are going to be able to get done. Are they going to be able to get Kyrie Irving? And if not, are they going to go after Fred VanVleet and maybe the Bulls get none of those people?
Yeah, I mean, look, for one thing, it's going to be hard for the Bulls to make a deal like that happen. You know, they don't really have the assets at this point. For another thing, the Lakers are in a similar situation to the Bulls where there is a split there. I think the split is less, within its own front office and more front office on one side and LeBron on the other side. LeBron would like to see them go get Kyrie Irving. LeBron has very little interest in going back and playing 82 more with D'Angelo Russell, especially after what we saw in the conference finals this past year. That's where that split is. But management really does not want to bring in Kyrie Irving. They'll really have to sell out if they want to sign Kyrie Irving. They could possibly do a sign and trade, which would be a little less painful. But you know, if you want to go out and sign Kyrie Irving, you've got to get rid of Jared Vanderbilt, who's a very, very good role player for them. You got to give up your rights to Rui Hachimura, who played so well for them. And you know, they just don't want to do that. And why should they? The last time that LeBron talked them into a personnel move was Russell Westbrook. And you know, how did that work out? So it would behoove management in this case to stay strong and not go for Kyrie Irving for sure.
Talking NBA with Sean Devaney here on the Parkins and Spiegel Show. Wanted to talk coaching with you here for a second. Monty Williams got a 6-year, $78.5 million contract that can make up to $100 million. I did not know that NBA coaches rolled that deep, Sean. And Monty's a great coach, obviously, and there's no cap on it. But like, we don't know what every NBA coach makes. It's not all explicitly reported like that. Is this a new normal, or was I unaware that Greg Popovich or Steve Kerr or Eric Spoelstra are making $20 million a year quietly?
No, right. I mean, look, Pat Riley gets $11 million a year, and you know, he basically he decides how much he makes in Miami. So, and even he didn't have the audacity to give himself $14 million a year. It was a shocking contract, no question. Is it the new normal? It's going to set a bar where agents for coaches can now use that as something as leverage, and that's certainly going to be valuable going forward for those guys. You know, for Detroit, they're looking at it like, you know, this is the guy who can do the two things we need. One is to continue to develop our young guys. Monty Williams has done that. He's played that role as a coach before, and he can turn us around and get us into the playoffs and hopefully deep into the playoffs. He's shown he can do that as well. So you know, that's how Detroit's looking at it. Like we're not going to get this guy any other way but to overpay him, because right now the Pistons' job isn't considered great. So they felt like they had to do that, but certainly you know, there's 29 other owners who are sitting there saying, what did you just do to us? You know, you've really cost us in our negotiations going forward. There's no question that this is going to raise the bar. But if you're Detroit, you felt like this is something you had to do.
It's so crazy, the coaching carousel. It's like a volleyball team rotating, you know, every off season. It's just ridiculous. And yet, Joe Mazzulla going back in Boston. What am I missing here? Because every time they lost or got drummed out of a series, it seemed he would, and it only happened once they got drummed out, but times that they lost big games, he would say a version of, I didn't have my team ready to play. And that sure seems pretty damning, Sean.
Yeah, and he didn't make himself very many friends in the media, which, you know, and people argue here and say, well, he doesn't have to do that. And that's fine. You don't, but it helps to win something first and then kind of be a jerk to us. That's fine. But you know, it is part of your job dealing with the media. And he just had a really off-putting way of addressing people. And it makes you wonder, you know, how is he with the rest of the organization and stuff like that. But you know, the thought process from the Celtics, as I've been told, was, 3 years ago, Brad Stevens was a coach, and you go to Ime Udoka, now you go to Joe Mazzulla. Are you going to take a team that's in its prime, that's ready to make a run, that's gone to the finals and gone to the brink of the finals back-to-back years, are you going to take that team and put a fourth coach in 4 years? That was the real concern there was, you know, let's try to get some continuity. Now, the whole staff basically left. The whole staff went to join Ime Udoka in Houston. So there's a lot of turnover there, no matter how you look at it. But I think the Celtics felt like, you know, to make a fourth coaching change in 4 years, it's just going to be too much. And so they decided to give Mazzulla another chance. And, you know, it's you're right about the coaching carousel, but at the same time, you know, this was a case where they felt like they needed some continuity.
Sean Devaney from Heavy.com. Follow him on Twitter at Sean Devaney. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Yep. You too. Keep killing it, Sean. It's a long time in the business for a guy who's bounced around and obviously kept the contacts. That's how it works, right? Like, if you're good enough to have kept the contacts, even if you're Mark Stein and you're writing on a Substack, or you're Sean Devaney and you're writing on Heavy, you got stuff. We will read it.
Yeah, clearly informed and opinionated throughout the league. Said he didn't really want to go down it too much on the game, but said Arturas is the Stan Pat guy, which makes sense, which is what we both guessed at, because he's the one who put it together. And if he said he'll have final say, then they're going to Stan Pat. And we know that Shams reported that they're working on the extension for Vooch, which comes as no surprise. I saw Darnell Mayberry say season ends, enter into free agent talk or contract talks with impending free agent is not news. I tend to agree with him because of what I said from before the deadline. Like, you can't lose him for nothing.
Uh-huh.
So maybe they sign and trade him, but they have to sign him or it's a colossal failure and a misallocation of resources. So I am expecting the Bulls to largely run this thing back.
Well, I think that's logical in terms of as it connects to the deadline. And I think at the deadline, they made it clear what they were doing, which was not selling, not backsliding, if anything, trying to buy. And I think that's going to be what they continue to do. I thought in there, Sean basically confirmed, yes, Arturas is the guy who wants to keep it together and hopes that his vision can actually happen on the court with a healthy Lonzo or somehow some other point guard replacement.
Yeah.
That as you go down the line, it gets split, whether that is Mark Eversley or Billy Donovan. He didn't get specific, but, you know, you can kind of put it all together there. It strikes me that it's likely Eversley, but he didn't say. But the other thing that he flat out confirmed is the Reinsdorfian nature of ownership last year when they didn't use the mid-level exception. And last year, as we observed at the deadline and such, and not going over the tax, that's a team that since Jordan has been chasing the middle. Happily and willingly chasing the freaking middle so they can be profitable and have a round, maybe two, and that would be a great year. But that's just so freaking dispiriting to have an insider pretty much explicitly confirm what it feels like an ownership chasing aggressively the middle.
Yeah, a lot of NBA teams don't pay the luxury tax if the team isn't good. And Michael Reinsdorf said to Casey Johnson on the record that he will pay the luxury tax when it's worth it for them to do it. I agree that last year's team wasn't worth paying the luxury tax. But would I prefer a situation like the Warriors where Joe Lacob's like, I don't care what the rules are. We're going to win it every year. We're going to be competitive every year. They spend over the tax every year. They do not care. They are going to pay top dollar for top players for a top product.
That's a rich hobbyist.
That's the dream. It's the dream. That's just not what we have for any of the teams. You can't have it in the NFL because salary cap, salary floor, there's rules on it. Can't have it. And then all the other teams here, we don't have it.
Hard cap in hockey as well.
Yeah. And you can do it in baseball, and you can do it if you're willing to pay the tax.
In the NBA.
And
we've got one owner who doesn't do that for either of those two franchises that he owns.
The Reinsdorfs.
And we've got the Cubs who've shown a willingness to do it a bit in the middle of a window.
They will pay the luxury tax, and because they make a lot of money, they spend a lot of money. Like, the Cubs are in a good situation because they're the Cubs, and they make a ton of money and reinvest it into the team. Like, the Cubs don't have a bad ownership situation. Far from it. But it's not a rich hobbyist ownership situation. That's what I was saying. Like, there's only a few of them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the Padres is clearly that.
Clearly.
Steve Cohen with the Mets is clearly that. You can't even say that the Dodgers are. The Dodgers have an insane amount of money from striking that local TV deal at the perfect time right before cord cutting, where they make more local revenue and money than anybody else does. So they just have more money.
We don't know what that Dodgers ownership group would do if they didn't have that television money.
They've never had to prove it.
Yeah.
Because they get more money than anybody else for media.
The Phillies are also one of those television money juggernauts with an owner who seems motivated as well.
So the Cubs spend a bunch of money and have an advantage over the majority of their competition because of the money that they make. But what we were talking about is the Warriors is a good example in the NBA. They're like, we are going to give our players huge deals, and it doesn't matter that we've paid Steph and Draymond and Clay and Durant. We're also going
to
pay Wiggins, and we're going
to
also pay for a big coaching staff, and we're going to spend.
Yeah. And Mark Cuban is that guy as well, or at least was for a long time.
Yeah. He hasn't had the free agent success, though. You know what I mean? He has not paid a luxury tax premium to sign a ton of free agents and recruit a bunch of free agents to Dallas.
Because he hasn't had that person who's willing to be a partner in it.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens with Kyrie here.
Ballmer seems to be that a little bit for the Clippers. Pays the tax, moved them out of Staples, building his own things. You know, he seems to kind of be close to that.
It can exist via the rules in the NFL, and they also have they've got the collusion on lockdown. They're the best colluding ownership group in all of professional sports.
Yeah.
Real good at it.
Okay, because some owners have way more money, but they have to funnel it into their stadiums, right? Like Kroenke, he's got a ton of money. So he's got a badass stadium. His stadium is so awesome, it holds two teams. Jerry Jones has a bunch more money than a lot of people. He's got a badass stadium.
Don't all the stadiums hold two teams? You got to play someone.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
It's a good point.
That's true.
Four teams. His stadium holds four teams.
At once?
It's a pretty impressive stadium.
No.
Yeah, still just
over
two.
A two-week period.
Yeah, it could be up to four.
I guess other ones do that
pretty
too.
Special.
Yeah. It's special.
Yeah, it's a good point.
That's why they gave him China. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's how you get China if you're in the NFL.
Him and Kevin Lapka.
Steve Stone. That's a time spent listening joke, folks. Steve Stone will join us in 40 minutes. Tuning into the sport because you love the sport or you love the drama. Next on The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Greg, do you still feel like I'm the worst radio host in this city's history?
Nah, maybe the second, but that's all right.
All right, cool.
We're just having fun.
Yeah,
we're just having fun.
Afternoons on The Score.
The Guan Jaya River Market. Fabrics and spices traded under a star.
How about sports? You follow sports?
It's 4th and inches, and the Giants are going for it. You've got to love sports.
So I love the NBA and the NBA Finals and will always watch. But because I'm in media, we are in media, we get inundated sometimes with, the TV executives. They like this matchup. They don't like this matchup. The ratings were down 6%. They were up 14%. And I can't imagine anything that has less of an impact on my life. You know, it's just, it's not something that really matters if the Super Bowl's ratings are up or the World Series ratings are up or the NBA Finals ratings are up, if you're going to watch it and enjoy it.
Does it matter to us, though, as content creators and content curators, you know, gatekeepers, if you will, of what we decide to talk about over a 4-hour period? You know, do you look at it and think about it that way? You know, people aren't watching this thing, or people are. Like, I think about that a bit. In the end, it's our passion and our curiosity, our interest that drives content.
Yeah, well, there's so many. There's a ton of factors, right? Like, if the White Sox were in the World Series, the ratings would not be as high as if the Cubs were in the World Series. But we would still talk about the White Sox being in the World Series, right? So it's all just a...
Would we?
I think we would
at the 40s.
Yeah, it's when we schedule the fun. It's like with anything, it's a balancing act. But this little clip from Dan Patrick was going around in Nuggets and NBA Twitter and everything like that. And he's longtime NBA guy, played basketball his whole life, covered many NBA finals, and a very astute television observer. This is what Dan Patrick said about the Nuggets.
Denver has a great team. Start to finish, best team. But they're not tune-in factor worthy. If you're a casual basketball fan and you know the Nuggets are playing, you're going to breeze right by there. And if I said, oh, my God, Joker's playing, Jamal Murray's playing, Aaron Gordon's playing, you're not stopping. Michael Porter Jr. III, you're not stopping. Golden State, you're stopping. Jimmy Butler, you're probably stopping. Celtics, you might because they're the Celtics. I mean, there's certain teams and players that you're going to watch. It's just, that's the fact. If you ask a TV executive, what do you think of Denver in the finals? if they were honest, they'd go, ooh. Well, you know, we hope for a 7-game series.
Is this then a finals where the ratings will be down because of what he's talking about? Because if you just watch, Denver's got the best offense in the league. They have the number one rated offense in the postseason. They have the best player in the league, a guy who was top three MVP this year and won it the last 2 years. And last night, it was a lopsided game, but Jokic set the record for assists in an NBA Finals debut.
Oh, yeah.
He had a triple-double.
Their fourth option, Aaron Gordon, dominated the first quarter offensively. They've got an unbelievable offensive team. Jamal Murray had, what, 23 in the first half?
Yeah, and it was just workmanlike, precision, seemingly indefensible offense. Like, if the Warriors, with Steph and Clay and everybody that we know, had that type of offensive domination in an effort,
yeah,
we'd be talking about it in a way of like, oh, this is amazing. What incredible offensive revolutionary basketball.
But Steph is electric and lovable and
been doing, and I guess like known because we've seen him in the finals for so many years in a row, and this is, you know, the Joker's first deep playoff run. But so it felt like I'm watching that game, I admit, not the most exciting because of I didn't ever think that Miami really had a shot at it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are watching the finals or if you are watching sports because of your love of sport, that is offensive basketball played at the highest level you can possibly see it.
Yeah.
So I would think you'd appreciate it. Not you, Spiegel, but like the audience. But I think that
Spiegs would hate that.
Right. But it just star power. That's such a and market size.
Yeah,
and,
well, and also like let's be clear. Some of what Jokic does is fun to watch if you really know the angles of the game and realize his gravitational force and can appreciate his skill. But in terms of actually watching him, he's often not an aesthetically pleasing player to watch. Like there's not I don't find him that way. Like I'm in awe of his court sense and his level of control and how he has the game on a string. But that takes a certain kind of, and I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm just saying it takes a certain kind of sort of cerebral appreciation for the game and the angles and the way that a team functions. And watching Jamal Murray is more aesthetically pleasing to me when he like takes somebody off the dribble, does a shake somehow. Like we're used to being able to quantify that and appreciate that. Like, do you find, and if we just keep it to big men, is Joel Embiid a more aesthetically pleasing big man to watch than Nikola Jokic?
I don't know, man. The passing
is great. I agree.
Of Jokic, like he.
I mean, for the casual NBA fan, in terms of immediate resonance, there's something that's not as aesthetically pleasing about Jokic as many other superstars, in my opinion.
Well, so what you're saying is, I think, that it's not speed or athleticism.
Correct. When he creates off the dribble,
Jamal Murray is fast.
Yeah.
You know, LeBron was not anymore, but like explosive. Steph is fast, but Jokic, man, there were two different plays last night where I was legitimately surprised where the ball ended up. Like, watching the game closely with my nephew, I consider myself a pretty astute basketball observer,
yeah.
And was legitimately like, oh, wow, I didn't even, nope, didn't see that, and definitely the right play, one for a wide-open dunk, one for a cross-court three, that it was just like, oh, my God, that's pretty amazing. He's 6'11", and he also has double-digit rebounds and nearly 30 points.
Hey, man, look, I agree. I'm wondering how the casual basketball fan feels about observing that and watching that, because I agree. But like a lot of casual basketball fans are looking for that explosive takeover score
okay.
in that way.
Yeah, I think that people are not familiar with him because they're not a marquee team and marquee market and on national TV a bunch, and this is their deepest run. But if you gave that team the chance, it's pretty damn pleasing basketball to watch. This was interesting from Breen and Jeff Van Gundy on the broadcast on Jokic.
Jokic, you marvel at his complete game. He passes like magic. He rebounds like Moses. Shoots like Dirk.
Okay, now I gotta like rebounds like Moses. Are you
Moses Malone?
I know. You want to check yourself?
Maybe the greatest rebound, but he does rebound him like him in traffic.
Doesn't
jump very much like Moses. Ball knocked out of bounds. I'm not saying he's good at
it. Own it, Mike. It's okay. Just own it.
You said it.
All right, I take it back.
Good. Because I was getting questionable when he said pass like magic. I'm like, oh, and then Moses.
I mean, is that ridiculous? Like, so they were, for him to have a triple-double in every game this series, it was like 12-1. That's insane.
Yeah, for him to have one in every single game
of the series, whether it goes 4, 5, 6, or 7, they're like, it's definitely possible. Like he was averaging 30, 13, and 10 for the playoffs. Not for a series, not for the Western Conference Finals, for the whole postseason. Like it's not new. Like I think that what's happened here with him specifically is, and I did it for sure. I said that Giannis was the best player in the world. Some people said it was Durant. Some people put Luka there like too early.
You want to check yourself?
But Jokic won two games. So I don't know. Maybe I should be checking myself. But like, if Jokic, when he was winning those MVPs, had a healthy Michael Porter Jr. and had a healthy Jamal Murray like the whole time, which he didn't,
they would have been probably in the finals again.
At least one of the other 2 years.
Absolutely. I mean, well,
and we'd be talking about it too. But that is nothing about Jokic. Right, that's just about it's a team game and you've got to have a good supporting cast.
Yes.
And the West is tough and the Warriors have been loaded I think he's the best player in the sport.
I think he is probably as well. I mean, like I admire the hell out of him and I love watching it because I love watching the way that he dominates. But I was talking about just aesthetics.
I know
and
what
like
you're saying.
Tune-in factor. And there's several textures speaking to that. Here's one. Tim Duncan was the man. Got as many titles as Shaq, but people wanted to watch Shaq. Joker is better than Embiid, but Embiid would be better looking to the player as a casual fan. Here's another. Sports are about watching superhuman people do things that we cannot do. Nothing he does looks like it is superhuman, even though it's insanely great. I think that's actually pretty well said. When you watch Giannis, and we've all watched Giannis, it's insane that a man that big is that fluid and doing what he does. It's insane to watch Durant as a 7'2" guard.
Yes.
With that handle. Jokic is doing incredible things that I admire and love, but it doesn't have that same sort of magnetic allure athletically as some of the others in the game.
That is undeniably true. He doesn't jump very high, and he's not very fast.
And if the question is tune-in factor,
right,
or like excitement, like if you – here's a texter who says, I watched the game yesterday. It was the second NBA game that I've watched this season. It was a fun watch, but not electric. Now, I don't know how much for that person is because the Heat weren't in it. You know, that could raise it up for you.
Yeah.
But I think Jokic presents an interesting aesthetic dilemma.
Does
for
he remind
people.
You of anyone?
God.
Because to hear Breen do that when you get this check yourself, because I'll tell you what it reminds me of. It reminds me of LeBron, but without the athleticism, but the productivity, the basketball IQ.
No, that's fair.
The feeling like he can do anything. And again,
the court vision, man.
Yeah.
The feeling like he can control the game and do whatever is necessary in any skill for that particular moment.
He had one field goal attempt midway through the second quarter.
And they were still dominating.
They were up double digits. He had shot the ball one time. There were 6 minutes left in the second quarter. Like it was – so, again, obviously there might not be two more different styles of play. Of arriving there than LeBron and Jokic. LeBron's the best athlete the game's ever seen. But in terms of actually can do anything on the basketball floor, I don't know, man.
Yeah, no.
It's it's pretty incredible to see. And so I love watching them play.
Texters are saying, here's one. It's because the Joker isn't flashy.
Yeah.
Appears to be not nearly as athletic as his peers, yet he's incredibly dominant, which makes it even crazier to observe. More impressive because he's playing a different game than everybody else. It's not greatness in basketball like we're used to seeing. He's playing chess. Everyone else is playing checkers. Another texture says young Arvydas Sabonis that we did not get a chance to see.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it is a remarkable court awareness and dominance of the sport. And as a coach on the floor, and Michael Malone says as much, he's comfortable saying it. The decisions are amazing.
Well, and I know this is basketball nerdier, but they all also know how to play off him amazingly. Like, Porter and the catch-and-shoot stuff, he was terrible last night, but he just gets the ball wherever he needs to get it.
Yeah.
Like the dribble handoff game with him and Jamal Murray, they all know how to play like kind of in his orbit.
Yeah.
And it's really, really fun, especially offensively.
The New York Times has an incredible infographic today on their app that it allows you to watch 9 different plays. And it pauses right before somebody makes the pass. And there's at least 3 of them that are Jokic in there.
Yeah.
And it says, which player do you think the ball is going to?
Oh, I bet you the plays that I was thinking of were on there.
It might be.
I got to check it out.
Yeah, it's super cool because you're like, oh, and you can gauge like where the momentum is taking the players and where Chris Paul and Jokic and others are delivering the ball.
Oh, so it's not just from last night?
No.
Oh, okay. Then,
maybe it's not from last night.
Yeah,
it's still a really fun exercise and a well-executed infographic. Highly recommend.
All right, we'll check it out. Steve Stone joins us at 4 o'clock. A team in town has tried to fill a position seemingly for years and years and decades and generations. They still haven't done it, and Spiegs is going to tell us that it's even worse than it seems next on The Score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Spend some time with our friends Danny Parkins and Matt Spiegel.
Yes.
Afternoons on The Score.
There's been nothing but raves about Romy Gonzalez this offseason. Even had a player came into my office in the offseason and said, don't you dare trade that guy. Lennon Sosa got a little taste last year. He obviously moved quickly. Those are two of the most interesting guys in that mix. Obviously, Lurie's around, guys like Zach Remillard.
What are we doing here?
And Lurie's not even around anymore.
Guys like Zach Remillard. Not even Zach Remillard.
That's delicious, by the way. You put that with a pork chop.
It's a special on rosemary, right?
Oh, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
Rosemary closed. Don't try to go there.
Oh. God, a lot of bad info out there.
I need them to bankroll your 10 grand that you owe me.
Yeah, they're closed. I definitely won't be there tonight.
Oh, well.
Interesting.
It's going to be awkward.
I know where you'll be. You'll be at the Taylor Swift show. We're in sequence. That's what everybody's doing.
But what would be wrong with that?
Nothing. But I'm just saying, I got a report from my wife. Usually in our neighborhood there in the South Loop, we see like the people, she says, everybody's wearing sequins. Every single person walking around right now is like, she doesn't go on till 8. It's 3:47 and the neighborhood is swimming with people in sequins.
I left my apartment today at probably 11:45 on the north side. It was filled with women who are going to see Taylor Swift. It was an enjoyable red line ride.
Yeah.
Lots of pretty girls.
I believe it. God.
Danny, everybody's talking about the White Sox second baseman. Everybody
Oh,
is.
I can't stop having conversations in my personal life about the White Sox second baseman. It's just like, hey, Owen.
Yeah.
I just talked to your mom about the White Sox second baseman. Don't bring it up.
Yeah. James Fegan wrote a big thing today about it. Like, even with Romy Gonzalez's little surge here, and the fact that Jake Berger had a home run while playing second, as a position group, of all the second base people in all of baseball, the White Sox second basemen are second to last in OPS at 488. Okay? That's a horrendous total for an entire position group. Oakland is dead last at 460.
You never want to just be you and Oakland
never.
This year in baseball.
So I thought to myself this morning, I thought, self, is this the worst position group of any position on any team right now in Major League Baseball? The Oakland second baseman with the White Sox second. But who would spend the time to look that up? This guy.
Okay.
Right here.
Gave it to myself.
I did.
Good for you.
So
what are you looking up?
That the OPS, the combined OPS of everybody to play second base for every team in the majors. Then I looked at every position.
Danny, so, OPS is on base percentage plus slugging.
Yeah,
percentage.
Got it. Yeah,
it's just a shorthand for offensive decency. So two teams under 500 at second base, the White Sox and Oakland. At shortstop, no team is below 571. At third base, no team is below 528. Okay, I'm looking for bad position groups here.
I got any
position.
I get it.
At first base, there's only one team below 600. That's Houston at 518. Jose Abreu.
Jose.
RBI last night. I was watching that live. Okay, he had a sack fly.
There you go.
That home run was last weekend where he sprints around the bases in Oakland.
He forgot how to trot.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
You know the OPS that I care about, Danny? Tanny Speaks.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's that?
It's OPS Oysters Plus Sauce.
Okay.
Rosemary ranks number one in Chicago in OPS.
Oysters Plus Sauce. All right. Well, look. It left fielders.
I like that one.
Left fielders, no team below 600. No team has a left field group below 600. Center field, one team below 600. It's the Royals at 483. That's their center fielders at 483. Right field, no team below 541. Catcher, one team below 500. The Padres at 497. You can see their bad catchers against the Cubs tonight.
I'll be staying up late to watch that.
I know you will, especially on a Friday.
Can't wait.
So here's what I'm saying. The White Sox second base group is one of just four position groups on any team in baseball with an OPS below 500.
Oh, hell yeah.
They're the third worst.
So Royals center fielders
and A's.
Padres catchers and A's second base.
Who is the Royals center fielder?
I don't know. Look it up. I don't know.
You should look it up, dude. It's your topic.
Well, I didn't decide to go that deep on Royals center
fielders. Is it still Alcides Escobar?
No.
It's Drew Waters.
It's Omar Moreno.
Oh, Drew Waters. That's who it was.
Amos Otis. I believe it's Amos Otis. So,
is he performing at Windy City Smokeout this year?
He is. Yeah, dude, he picks it, man.
Bernstein goes fishing there at the Drew Waters. He really likes it over there.
That guy loves to fish, dude.
He does.
He loves
to throw a pole in the water
right.
Once in a while.
So my drop point, a line. Chef right in the water. White Sox second baseman.
Your response makes what I said derogatory when I was just talking about fishing poles.
Right, and you would never say anything derogatory.
Never have, never will.
No, you would never go down that kind of road. White Sox second baseman, bad. Royals center fielder's bad. A's second baseman, bad. That's it. That's where you are. And the good news is nobody knew that this was a problem before the season or before the season before that or before the season before
yeah,
that.
Half my adult life.
The good thing is that they've got a couple decade head start on not solving this problem.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And everybody knew it was a problem. And they're like, yeah, we're okay.
Well, you know what would be interesting?
You know why? Zach Remillard. That's why they thought they were okay.
No. Guys like Zach Remillard.
And Leury's around. Or he was.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Not anymore.
Yeah, he was.
They went all the way to Japan to find Tadahito Iguchi.
And then
he was good for a year. Then like, you know what? We've done all we can.
Oh, man. They thought Gordon Beckham was the answer for the next decade. He's doing TV. He's now doing TV.
And everyone in his draft class is still playing baseball. Lance Lynn is in Gordon Beckham's draft class.
I know. Buster Posey's retired and is going to the Hall of Fame. But Lance Lynn still playing. Gordon Beckham and Hunter.
For your next, the next research project.
Yes. Oh, please let me write this down. What would you like, sir?
Well, you could take and do like the last 10 years of all the position groups and see if the White Sox second baseman for the last decade, have been the worst position group in baseball.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Sean Sears, get on it, dude.
Yeah.
You know what? At least I can measure it. Actually, I could do that. So last decade.
That's what I'm saying.
What's the last good second baseman year that they've had? Is it Tadahito Iguchi? You know what, Danny?
Cesar Rodriguez.
Danny, you've given me a task for Sunday morning on Hit and Run.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Maybe Tanny can get you the audio after you don't listen to
Yeah, well, obviously. Yeah, I mean, I'll check it out on the Odyssey Rewind feature.
There you go.
App.
That works.
Yeah, well, it sometimes works. But yeah, I'll check it out. And
I'm on it, actually.
Right? Is it possible that White Sox second base has been the worst position group
of the last decade.
Of the last decade by OPS.
I'll have an answer for you at 9:40 on hit and run.
Compare it to right field, though, also while you're doing that.
White Sox,
that
right field.
That would be incredible if the two worst were White Sox right field and White Sox second base.
2019, Yomer Sanchez was a 1.4 war at second base. Moncada, a 1.4 war in 2018. Yomer Sanchez, a 3.4 war in 2017.
What about Carlos Sanchez? He had some good years over there also.
Not until he turned into Yomer.
Yeah.
How about Yomer Goldstein? What did that guy do? That not how it works?
The 3.4 is the highest since Ray Durham in 2002.
Oh, so I could do the last 20 years. Should I do the last 20? I can actually sort that.
How much time do you have?
Well, I'll just do... I'm not going to do both.
Okay.
You tell me, decade or 20 years, what do you want?
I'll defer to Taney. How long for your life do you feel like?
Half your adult
Let's
life feels...
40 years.
you know, 20 feels right, doesn't it?
Since Ray Durham?
Well, that's when we did your baseball, your 30... players for 30 years, we talked about the black hole at the second base position.
Correct.
Since Ray Durham left. So I think that's appropriate.
That's more content I could repurpose for Sunday morning. Well done.
All right. Well, we'll see if Steve Stone will say anything that you could repurpose for Sunday morning when he joins us next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.